Welcome to the Should Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Esports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Kelly Bidlin, Numbers Game, Long Shots Podcast will join us. We will go over the NBA Finals. We have a series. We have a Game 4. We will have a Game 5. And I got a feeling we will have a Game 6. And who knows, maybe beyond here, as we will talk to Kelly about what's been a fun series. Game 4 Wednesday night. Knicks, once again, very small favorites. 1.5, total to 16.5. They are still series favorites, despite the fact they lost Game 3. They lead 2-1, and they are minus 170. Series favorites, you get about $1.50 or so on the comeback if you like the Spurs. Boy, it's been a fun series, and you know, a couple things. I mentioned the other day, I picked the Knicks. I thought, you know what? Hard to go against this team right now in that building. It might be tough for a younger Spurs team. And I trust Brunson to get a bucket at the end of the games more than I trust anyone for the Spurs. And maybe it's come to the point where it's actually too much Brunson. He is shooting a lot. These other guys have played well, but man, it's a lot of Brunson. I don't think I mentioned on this podcast. I mentioned it with John Jastrzemski. He was either last week or this past Sunday. These shows, like I mentioned, have kind of, you know, they kind of blend together sometimes. And again, I was cautious about putting too much stock into the crowd, but I brought up the point to JJ, to John, hey, with the tickets going for 10, 15 plus grand for the cheapest tickets, is that a concern that maybe, you know what, you're pricing out the fans and you're actually hurting your home court advantage? Because let's face it, Derek Jeter and Eli and these, you know, politicians, they're not going to be as loud as, you know, your average rabid Knick fan. I thought that was maybe a little bit of a factor on Monday night. I did not think that was this like overwhelming, deafening crowd. It was a good crowd. I didn't think it was this insane crowd that, you know, figure the Knicks haven't won in forever, haven't been in the finals in forever. This is just going to be, you can't hear yourself think. And it's always hard to know on TV, but it didn't come across as, wow, this crowd is just deafening, huge home court advantage. And now, look, it's a very tricky series because not only does home court not matter, leads haven't mattered. Leads haven't mattered. The Knicks were down with 12 in the first quarter, down 11 after one. Then they're up 7 at half. Then the next thing you know, they're losing. Game one, Knicks are down 14, middle of the third quarter. Then they're leading. Then they're up 8. Then they're trailing again. You know, game two, Knicks are up 14. Spurs have a lead with under a minute to go. Then they lose. It's just not always home court mattered. These leads haven't mattered. These teams are very even. I think, you know, even through three games, which is not a huge sample size, it's pretty fair to say these teams are pretty evenly matched. These games are all kind of coin flips. You know, very unusual that home court doesn't matter. I mentioned the series, I think, the other day. The only series I can remember where the road team won the first three games, Bulls, Suns in 93, Bulls won on the road in game one, Bulls won on the road in game two, we're up 2-0. Then the Suns in triple overtime won game three. The Bulls won at home in game four. That would be the only home game, the only home team to win in that series. Game four, they won by 6. Then game five, Phoenix down 3-1 in Chicago facing elimination, wins in Chicago. So they won 2 out of 3 in Chicago. They go home for game 6, trying to force a game 7, and can't do it. They lose 99-98. I think it was the year Barkley won MVP, and Paxson hit a shot. Paxson hit the famous shot to win that series. So the road team went 5-1 in that series. And then in 2019, Raptors-Warriors, the Raptors won game 1 at home, and the road team won the next 5 games. Warriors evened it up at 1-1. Toronto went to Golden State and won both. Golden State, that was the game Durant got hurt, avoided elimination, got it to 3-2. Then in game 6, Klay Thompson gets hurt and the Raptors win it late. And the road team goes 5-1 in that series. So on one hand, in game 4 is very tricky to predict. I mentioned this with OKC in San Antonio where you know, I got the first three games right in terms of the picking the spread winner. Then by game 4 I picked OKC, not on this pod, but you know, on the shows or whatever, on the VSiN shows. And I bet OKC. Once OKC lost that game, I just felt like I didn't have much of a feel for the series anymore, just because both teams were dealing with injuries, and I just lost a feel for that. I'm kind of there here with this series. I think the Knicks probably win. I think these teams probably split the next 2 games, and you're looking at a game 6 with a ton of pressure on New York, a ton of pressure, and that crowd will be tight on Wednesday night in game 4, and I think the crowd will be tight in game 6. They'll be excited, they'll be loud, but they'll be tight. I think they split the next 2. I'll say the Knicks win this one and the Spurs win game 5. And we're looking at a game 6. I'll say home court starts to hold up a little bit here, but Hey, home court hasn't mattered through the first three games. These teams are very evenly matched. You could say all three games are pretty much a coin flip. It looked for a moment like the Spurs might kick this one away in game three, where a couple times Wemby missed a layup up eight, a really easy layup where he could have basically just laid the ball, you know, off the glass. It rolled off and the Knicks came back the other way. And then the four-point play that wasn't. It looked like that was going to be a four-point play to put the game at 11, assuming Wemby was going to make the free throw. Three gets wiped off, a stupid foul. I think it was by Vassell. Might not have been. I think it was by Vassell. Regardless, he pushes the guy in, pushes Mitch Robinson. It might have been Keldon Johnson. It was Keldon Johnson or Vassell. Pushes Mitch Robinson into Wemby. The three is negated. Go the other way. Brunson scores. All of a sudden, it's a five-point game. And felt like, oh man, that went from icing the game to now you got to pull it out. Anobi hits a three at the end to make it a two-point game. A little tricky with the inbounds. Castle, though, hits a couple of free throws, pushes it to four, and the Spurs survive. You could make the case the Spurs should be up 2-1. Knicks could say, hey, we could be up 3-0. We could have won last night. I don't think it's an unfair result. I think 2-1 Knicks is pretty representative of, you know, how the series has gone. It could easily be 2-1 Spurs, but hey, look, game four, and you get to the point, and I always say how much I love game fours because it's either 2-2 and you're set in for a long series, or the Knicks win and it's 3-1 and they get a stranglehold. So game four, people always talk about, you know, it's 2-2, game five is the turning point, which of course is true, but game fours really are fascinating because I think that's where the series turns. And look at last round, OKC was up 2-1 on the Spurs. If they win game four, they're going to win the series and probably win it in short order. They lose, and all of a sudden, it's 2-2, and it's a longer series. I think game four is a lot of time the fork in the road moment, the fork in the road game. You know, a lot of pressure on the Knicks. If you're 2-2 going back to San Antonio for five and seven, and again, I mentioned on Monday, this would now be a brutal loss for the Knicks if they don't win the series. But this is kind of anyone's series. All these games are anyone's games. It's really a fairly evenly matched series here. These games are fairly evenly matched. I can't get it to the refs. The refs, that was unwatchable. As good as the games have been, that was unwatchable at the end of Monday night in game three. Just there was like a 10-15 minute stretch where you felt like no basketball was being played at one point in the fourth quarter. Review after review after review, a bunch of free throws. I can't complain about the refs. I know these refs and people look at it like, oh, the league is incentivized for this series to go longer, which they are, which is true. But hey, Wemby, part of why he's hard to officiate, Shaq was like this, all these big players like this. In order to defend him, part of defending him is you can't really let him jump. You got to kind of grab him and be physical with him before he's able to leave his feet. Because if he can leave the feet untouched, obviously if he's in the air and you push him, you're going to get called for a foul. And if he's in the air untouched, he's going to kind of do what he wants. And the Spurs were much more aggressive in terms of just throwing the ball up and letting him make a play, I thought, in game three. But I thought the Spurs, you know, I thought most of those calls were legitimate. Again, the refs had a rough night. Some of those reviews were obvious overturns. A lot of those calls were missed, but I don't feel like, man, the Knicks got completely robbed in that game. They should have won. They got a raw deal. I did think they got a little bit of a raw deal with the Spurs in the bonus early, but remember, the Knicks shot more free throws than the Spurs in game one. So it's not like, you know, it's not like it was completely lopsided from start to finish. I think, you know, these coaches are always going to do this, show a little gamesmanship. Phil Jackson did this for years. Complain about the refs. You say, hey, you scream bloody murder, and you hope if it buys you one call, you take the fine. And if it buys you one call in the next game, it's worth it for you. So I get why Mike Brown's doing it. I just don't totally agree that, you know, his team got robbed. I thought a lot of them were fouls, and I thought, you know, for the most part of the game, I wouldn't say it was well officiated because it wasn't. But I felt like the right team won. Having watched all the game, I felt like the right team won. So we'll see what Kelly Bidlin thinks. We'll get his thoughts on this game, the series, maybe some golf. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we're back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him on Numbers Game. You can catch him Long Shots podcast, Hardwood Handicappers. He does a lot, including joining us now. Kelly, we have a series. We have a finals. It is 2-1. How are you, man? Thanks for coming on.
I'm doing great, Will. Thanks for having me, as always. And yeah, hopefully we have a series. Hopefully. I think it's... Is it too early to say that after Game 3? Do we have to wait for Game 4? Okay, we could say it now. Because it does give us a couple days of, like, hope that this is something that we're going to get a great series, right? Because you get that pivotal, as they say, Game 4, where after that, it's either really going to be 2-2 and we've got a series, or it's 3-1 Knicks.
Yeah, I always say this. I love the game fours. It's a little bit of an underrated fork in the road moment where, like you said, 3-1 stranglehold or 2-2 and you know, buckle up. We're headed for seven. Look, I'd be surprised. It was nice, you know, especially, you know, bets aside, people, that's always the priority route for our bets. But bets aside, it was nice to see that game five, if necessary, to know we're going to get a game five. From a content perspective, we at least got a game five on Saturday. And I'd be surprised if the Spurs lost the next two, lose game four and lose game five, and they lose it in five. I mean, I guess it's possible. These games all seem like coin flips. But I would expect the Spurs, if nothing else, at least get a split of the next two. And then we're looking at a game six. And if that's the scenario, and even if it's 3-2 New York, man, there's a lot of pressure on the Knicks in game six. But game four, boy, I'm having a hard time with it. I think the Knicks probably win. But, man, I just lose a feel for these series when home court means nothing. And leads mean nothing. When these teams are up 14, they're trailing, and, you know, it's these leads just don't get held on by any of these teams. I start to lose a feel for it. Do you have a feel for game four, and who do you like?
Man, I really wish I had something stronger for you, Will. I think that naturally my mind goes to zigzagging and Knicks kind of refine their composure here in game four. You know, I think game three was always going to be tough. Of what does that atmosphere do to the Knicks, to the Spurs, to anybody? Just chaos last night at Madison Square Garden. And we haven't really heard too much on that it affected, you know, anybody one way more than another. But I had my concerns about that entering the game. Oddly enough, but I mean, both these teams, I shouldn't say oddly, because both these teams have been excellent on the road here over the past few weeks. I think it's four in a row for San Antonio and like five in a row for the New York Knicks now. But man, the Spurs, and especially their young guys, like, just looked more comfortable, I thought, finally in game three. You were getting just more cohesiveness, you know, out of Harper, out of Wembanyama, and Steph Castle. You know, all three of those guys I thought looked better and more comfortable in this game. So, little odd, spin this forward. I think from a numbers standpoint, Will, and I think we talked about this last time I was on with you, I have found it beyond interesting, and I know it's not the most fascinating listen for some of the rec bettors out there, but I have found it a very fascinating process of, if you are making your own numbers and your own power ratings, how you've adjusted this New York Knicks team through the past month and a half, right? It was 12 wins in a row. You know, I think in a large portions during the regular season, we would say, hey, that's a small sample size. Let's dial it back a bit. Wasn't against that strong a competition either. So I'm not saying right or wrong. I've just found it fascinating talking to other bettors how much they've upgraded the New York Knicks. And I heard a lot going into game three from people in, you know, more people that I don't talk to regularly about the NBA, but I heard a lot of, I'm surprised the Knicks aren't bigger favorites at home. And I didn't really get that because frankly, I thought the line had adjusted enough to the Knicks' new power rating kind of heading into the finals. And I thought if we were making the home court adjustment, the game three line made a fair amount of sense based off of what we saw in the first two games. So, look, this is a long way of saying I'm still about a point and a half, 2 points off this, more towards the Spurs side of things. So it's going to be hard for me to enter any one of these games and say that I like the Knicks over that Spurs side. I think situationally, though, this does set up better for New York tomorrow night to go win this one at home. They've been such a good home team all season long. The updated numbers after that game three loss, 37-12 straight up, 33-16 against the number over the course of the season. So Knicks, very good home team. I would probably lean that way, but it won't be a bet for me.
Knicks down 11 after the first quarter and go to the half up 7. Did you think the series was over at that point?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I think you got to expect some runs from these teams. We haven't. I still don't think we've seen the game where we've seen the best of either one of these offenses. I think the defenses have played pretty damn consistently well on both sides. I don't think there's been that huge of a difference between these two teams. Yeah, like Will, I think we could say that a little bit about the Spurs, you know, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, right? It's like, did you ever think the Knicks were going to be able to recover if the Spurs were going to catch them and blow right past them? And you know, they did to a degree. So, yeah, it was a nice run by the Knicks. I think we're going to see more of that, though, as I think with this series, as I think it goes on longer and longer.
I said this, I think it was either this Sunday or last Sunday. I brought it up with John Jastrzemski, I was doing the show with. I didn't sway my pick. I wish it had. You buy into this. The tickets are so expensive for the Knicks, it's actually hurting their home court advantage because, and, you know, instead of the rabid 30-year diehard Knicks fan who's going to scream his lungs out when the Knicks are on defense, you got Jeter and you got Eli Manning and you got politicians and you got the wine and cheese crowd, and it's not going to be the deafening atmosphere you expected. Is there any truth to that?
I mean, I believe it. To how much, I think that's hard to quantify, right? How much are we really decreasing the Knicks' home court advantage in a situation like that? I don't know. I don't have an answer for you on that, Will. But yeah, I'm on that page with you. I think not only from what you described, but this is a bunch of kids looking at a bunch of stars sitting on Celebrity Row. And like, this is something that, you know, us who talk sports and sports betting, we get used to it. Knicks games all the time. But like, these are kids. These are 22, 23 year old kids seeing all these celebrities too. You don't know how they're going to, perform under that kind of spotlight with that type of audience for their show. You don't know. So I think all those are fair to wonder about. And I don't really know how it makes things any easier for the Knicks.
If I gave you a revised prediction, forget future predictions, forget future bets, who wins the series and how many games? Like, if I gave you truth serum and made you answer, you'd say this team wins the series and how many games? And as I ask you this question, I realize that, man, I wouldn't answer with a ton of confidence, but you go first and I'll give you mine.
I don't really think I'm going to change my answer. Well, I bet Spurs in six and Spurs in seven. Did you do the same? I think you did the same, right?
I bet Spurs in six just because that was okay. The first thing, like, from a value standpoint, I liked the plus 550. As we got closer to the series, you never want to like change your pick, but I was like, more Spurs in seven. If you just said, hey, forget the odds, give me a blind pick, we're probably leaning more towards Spurs in seven, but I like the payout. And you're getting more of a jumbo payout for winning on the road. So I was with you. Spurs in six, Spurs in seven, life on the line, probably seven, but I like the value on six. Where would you go now?
I'm going to stay with Spurs 7. I'll go Spurs 7. Yeah. I think it's hard to go less than that, obviously. But I'll go Spurs 7. I think second most likely is Knicks 7, right? I think we're seeing 7 here. I do think the Spurs, I believe they pushed this. I think what we saw in game 3, that's a Knicks team we haven't seen in a month and a half, in a couple months. And it looked like a familiar Knicks team. And it's not to say that's a bad Knicks team. They were very good over the past couple years, but it was a lot of Brunson with the ball, not a lot of this movement that we'd seen this past month or so, and not a lot of Karl Anthony Towns. And, I mean, I'd hate to further simplify things, Will, but this is like getting to a point where it feels like, all right, Wemby versus Cat. Who's going to dominate? Who's going to have the most dominant games here over the remainder? Because I think that's the decider. And it sounds basic, but I really think it is. With the level... And people might roll their eyes when they hear that, but the level that Karl Anthony Towns is playing at, I thought was incredibly high and really elevating this entire team to another level. And if he can refine that in game 4 and it continues like that for the rest of the series, then the Knicks are probably winning this.
Is it too much Brunson? Because on one hand, look, he's your best player. You want to go down with Brunson. But on the other hand, man, you got Towns. You got Bridges, who's playing well. You got a lot of weapons here. It's almost like he's trying to do it himself. You answer pretty quickly. You think it's too much Brunson here?
Yeah, absolutely. That was something I was seeing more of last night. Shout out to Zach Lowe, who I know listens to your podcast regularly. So I want to make sure to shout him out. But he broke it down with the numbers actually today. I was listening to his pod, and it's like over 40% on Brunson's usage rate. And look, this is something that San Antonio tried to do with SGA too, right? It's, hey, let's let those guys who are very comfortable with the ball in their hands have the ball in their hands and make something happen against our star perimeter defenders. And it's not going great, at least from an efficiency standpoint. And I think last night, the problem is the Knicks can get into this mode where they can get comfortable with that. And I think they got comfortable with it last night. And that's something we had not seen out of them in a long stretch of time. Brunson had really been a part of this offense more so than the focal point. And I think they need to get back to that motion, getting that ball movement, getting him moving off ball a little bit more. I think that's going to create a more efficient Jalen Brunson and a better Knicks team. And you know what, Will? I think the biggest part of that to me is it's one of the areas that I can point at just on these rosters and say that the Knicks have an advantage. It is a very uniquely constructed team that the Spurs are with what they're rolling out there. I mean, they want to play Wemby and they want to play a lot of smalls. They want to play a lot of guards that are going to shoot. And when you have size on the wings like OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges, that should be an advantage for you. And there's not really the clear-cut guys that can go out and guard those guys. And I know we don't think of them as prolific scorers or anything like that, but both of them have they've got good, solid offensive games. And I look at OG more than Bridges in that. But I don't think there should be any surprise if OG Anunoby has some big offensive games here down the stretch. Just because if Wemby's stuck on Cat and not able to kind of roam in the middle, that guy does not – he's got a small guard on him out on the perimeter. And if he can take it to the hole, there's not much resistance to him getting to the rim if Wemby's not there. So I think Anunoby, his performance stood out in game three, but I don't think that's a fluke performance. He's been shooting the ball great this entire playoffs. Maybe that comes down a bit, but man, I think him playing aggressive, looking to attack, I think that is something that's repeatable for the Knicks.
Well, which leads me into finals MVP. Brunson even money, Wembanyama plus 160, Towns 5-1, Anunoby 25-1. Everyone else triple digits or longer. It'd be fitting because I mentioned before the series, I got burned with Caruso. I got my heart broken. If I had to take a long shot, it'd be Anunoby, but I don't feel like living through that again. I need a little break. So it'd be fitting if Anunoby won. It would be just absolutely perfect. Is there a bet to be made right now with these numbers?
I'm right there with you, and I ended up on Caruso with you. I thought you had a good angle off of that game one, and then I ended up on it too later in the series. And look, like I don't think it's a terrible bet. I don't think it's a terrible bet if anybody wants to go bet OG Anunoby here. I think there's a path to that getting home. He is part of the conversation of slowing down Wembanyama the rest of the series defensively, and offensively, he has a couple more big games. I think there truly is a path there. So if you really want to get greedy and go for the long shot, I think you can. Man, the guy we were talking about heading into game three, I think you just offered a better number on today, and that's Carl Anthony Towns. I mean, look, this is obviously correlated with who you think is going to win the series. If you think Spurs are going to win the series, it's Victor Wembanyama. And if you're looking to get into a live series bet right now, you're playing some of Wemby in the MVP market, even if it's 5 cents better than the series line. The Spurs aren't winning this series without Victor Wembanyama winning finals MVP. So that's that. I don't fully understand Brunson keep getting shorter and shorter and shorter here. What are we at? Like even money on him right now? I think there's some value on that Carl Anthony Towns number. I just think it could be dead wrong. Brunson's still getting up a ton of shots. The efficiency's terrible. This was kind of me and your whole argument, or at least big chunk of my argument for Caruso in the Western Conference Finals, right? It's SGA. The efficiency sucks. This isn't there. So I don't know how voters are going to look at that. That's always a struggle, right? We're always trying to handicap these voters and what they're going to look at. Okay, they're just going to go with the face of the team. Yeah, it's going to be Brunson then. He's got the points. And if that's all we care about, then it's going to be him. But I don't even think it takes a super advanced basketball mind to know that Carl Anthony Towns, what he's doing offensively and defensively, has changed this team over the past month and a half, and even just in this series, those first two games, what he played and played better than Victor Wembanyama, to me was by far the biggest difference in these teams. So I would think voters are going to look at it that way. And I think where you're getting that kind of number on Carl Anthony Towns now, if you like the Knicks to win this series, I think that's a pretty good number to bet right now.
Any props you would look at for game four, figuring, hey, maybe usage goes down. Who is it? Clarkson played more than McBride on the Knicks side. We'll see if that continues. But you study this stuff. Any props you want to get out there?
Yeah, the one I keep going to look at like every single game, and the number keeps getting adjusted. The books are thinking the same way as me. It's Dylan Harper. It's just Dylan Harper over on the PRAs. And you know, he had a great rebounding game in game three. What, he had 9 rebounds, I think, tied for the lead for the Spurs. I thought he would be more involved in attacking Brunson and pick and roll stuff, and we did see that a little bit more. I still think there's more of that to come from the Spurs. Just a reminder, this like a year ago, this is all we would talk about with the Knicks, is how weak the spine of their defense was. Carl Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson, pick and roll, tear them up. They can't stop it. They rely too much on the wings to be effective. And when they are, they're good. And when they're not good. And Will, it feels like we haven't heard any of that in the past couple months. And I think part of that is because of the better Knicks defense and a better coach unit, but also of lack of competition. And I think between Harper and Castle and Wemby, this is something they should be focusing on more. I think we did see more of that in game three with them attacking Brunson. So, look, I would only be looking over on Dylan Harper because I think he should be still be getting the ball more and more and more and getting more and more minutes. He's up in the 30s now minutes-wise, so that's there. Books have been pretty good about adjusting this, though. I think at 23.5 I saw today for his PRA. It would still be a look over, man. You see he's an aggressive rebounder, so he's going to put up numbers there. And if you like the Spurs to win, I think he's going to have to be a guy that scores. So not a bet I've made yet, but I'm going to be shopping that one around, probably end up on something small with him.
All right, some offseason stuff. What team is Giannis on in 3 months?
Man, it sounds like the Miami Heat, and I guess I'm buying into that at this point. I do think this, from all the reports we've heard, this gets done one way or the other before draft night. I think that we're living in that world. So I think this does get done sooner rather than later, finally, for all of us that have talked about this Giannis stuff for years. And look, it's been years of Pat Riley trying to go get Giannis down in Miami. I think he's going to finally accomplish that. It sounds like this is pretty much, you know, this is on the 2-yard line or something right now. It sounds like this is pretty much done.
Let me just jump in, though. Who is he going to play with? Like, where's he? Okay, I'm in Miami. Great. Beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful out. The waves, the ocean. Who am I playing with if I'm Giannis? Like, what's the point?
It's fascinating. It's fascinating, Will, because I think that, I think it's kind of desperate and it's okay. Let's get a star down here that we believe in. I mean, still think he's a top 5 player in the NBA, but yeah, you are basically saying here's Giannis, here's Bam, here's Norman Powell, and we got to build out the roster around them. It's a lot to ask, man. I'm right there with you. I think it is going to test Riley's roster building and Eric Spoelstra's coaching ability. I don't know that there's two guys that I trust in more to get it done than those two. But starting off a team in 2026 with the limited shooting abilities of Bam Adebayo and Giannis Antetokounmpo is a tough – it's a tough task. I think there's a couple things are going to have to happen. We've seen Bam's three-point shooting improve over the past couple years. That's going to have to continue for this to be a successful pairing. And Giannis Antetokounmpo, the defense that we saw a few years ago, it's going to have to get back to that level because I think the one thing you want to be able to say about that pairing is this duo is going to suffocate other teams on defense. And I just don't know that we've seen that level of defense out of Giannis here recently. So that's where you start. But it's going to have to be a lot of additions after that for sure, Will.
I mean, they barely have enough to get him if I'm Milwaukee. It's not like they're sending me something that's just going to completely blow me away, as opposed to if OKC wanted to have the check conversation plus all the picks, and hey, you know, you got me interested. Miami, it's kind of a lot of filler. I've heard, well, you get an all-star in Tyler Hero. I mean, that's a very generous, I know he's probably made an all-star team, but come on. And look, Giannis is going to have to play. So he's going to be on a team where he's going to be asked to like do a lot and play a lot. And as he gets older, he's been hurt a lot too. Mm-hmm. I don't know about that fit. I guess it's possible. I will read you this text. Somebody I trust, second, third hand, but it's somebody I trust, usually gets pretty good info. Hearing the relationship between Jaylen Brown and the Celtics is over. Both sides want to move on. They want Giannis, but are also interested in Jalen Johnson and Scottie Barnes. Rockets offered the Celtics Şengün and Jabari Smith. The Celtics want Amen Thompson. And you buy any of that? Anything actionable there?
I don't know. I got a hard time. I've got a hard time believing that Jaylen Brown's really, really out there and available. Maybe I'm wrong. This is one of those pairings we talked about 5 years ago, right? Hey, it was Tatum or Brown. You got to choose one and move on. And I think a championship says those two can play together. So I don't really know. I don't really understand a lot of those rumors and kind of reports that we've heard here over the past couple months. Yeah, I know Jaylen Brown had some unideal comments about it being a great season and everything after they got bounced. But you know what? For him personally, it was. He was a hell of a player. He was probably a top 7 player in the NBA this past regular season. I don't really – I mean, unless there is way uglier stuff going on behind doors than what we've seen, I don't think anything happens. I think Jaylen Brown stays put, and the Boston Celtics build around that duo. It's still one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference.
All right, last one, and this is the quickest turnaround I can ever remember. It's always a pretty quick turnaround, but if the NBA Finals somehow go seven, which is possible, it's certainly on the table, it's the 19th. The draft is on the 23rd, a Tuesday night, which less than 2 weeks from when people are listening. It's amazing, just the quick turnaround. Do you have any draft bets, thoughts, and anything you've looked at so far in the draft?
Yeah, I made a couple bets probably about a month ago at this point. And you know what? I'm not going to tell you I've heard much here recently that would have me either changing bets or rushing to make others. I think that stuff we're going to start hearing in about a week or so. But I bet Derrick Peterson, number one overall, would be the first pick. I bet that a little while ago, about plus 350. Look, I think everything that we're hearing, it's pointing more and more towards DeBanza. This is kind of just a stubborn call on my end where the Jonathan Givony comments right after the NCAA tournament really stick out to me of just kind of everybody. He said everybody in the NBA scouting circles that he runs in, that nothing really had changed in that race between those two players in several years, and it was always kind of consensusly viewed as Peterson being the better player between those two. So, look, I think everything's pointing towards DeBanza kind of being the guy, but I'm not ruling out Peterson yet. I don't know if that's something I'd run and bet right now, though, if I didn't have a bet in. I think the other one that is interesting is Cameron Boozer, where I think there were – you know, a lot of us pretty confident, you know, coming out of the college basketball season that this was 1, 2, 3, probably in that order of DeBanza, Peterson, and then Boozer. But man, I think a couple reports that have come out of Boozer being higher on some of these NBA team boards. So chance he jumps to 2. We know Carlos Boozer. I know JVT has a bet for him to go number 2. Carlos Boozer working with the Jazz front office. So a bit of a connection there. I think he's still likely 3rd, though, and I bet him to go 3rd minus 125. I laid that probably like a month ago. So I think those odds have gotten even shorter for him to go 3rd. I think that is still where he ends up, but just in full transparency, I have read some things about him being number 2 on some teams' boards.
I've even heard people say, you know what, why not Boozer number 1? His game translates, size, all the different things, passing. I have no bets. I'm kind of happy to have no bets. I'm sure I say this every draft, every cycle, NFL and NBA. It's like, oh, I have no drafts. I'm happy. Then by the time the draft comes around, I'm sweating out a million different things in a million different scenarios. I'm a nervous wreck because, you know, we get, oh, whispers of this, whispers of that. Well, Vegas refund comes on with Gil and you bet 20 of his things. So I'm sure I'll have stuff. But right now I'm pretty happy to not have much. I'm happy to have had you on, Kelly. Appreciate it. Let us know where we can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, you know, real quick before we go, Will, I mean, I would say the one thing that sounds the most consensus of what I've heard so far is Darius Acuff to the Kings. Those are the two that have been linked the most since the beginning, and all I've read here recently just points more and more towards that one happening. So that would be one I'd be interested if those markets pop up. But yeah, at Kelly Bidlin on Twitter, Long Shots for Golf Betting Podcast, and Monday through Friday on The Numbers Game.
All right, rate, review, subscribe, please. Hey, help us out. As I say that, I know I've got to do a contest. I'll have one coming up soon. I will not forget. I've done them in the past. I'll do one again. But leave a review if you get a chance. Apple, Spotify, however you leave your reviews. But we will be back on Friday. Will it be the Knicks 3-1 on the verge of clinching an NBA title, or will it be 2-all? And nervous time all around as we head for a critical game 5. Like I said in the beginning, I do think we'll have a game 6. I don't think the Knicks are winning these next 2, which means you're going to get a game 6 in some form or fashion here. So I do expect a game 6. We'll see what game 4 brings us, though, one game at a time. Looking forward to it. Thank you guys for listening. See you Friday.